Let's arise and bow before Almighty Yahweh. Father, we come before you on your Sabbath day. We thank you so much for all the blessings you've poured out upon us. Father Yahweh, we know that the signs are coming to pass and your coming is imminent. Help us, Father Yahweh, to strengthen our dedication to you. Help us to become more devoted to you and your word. Help us to forsake all and be willing to sacrifice all for your truth and your salvation. Father Yahweh, the days are evil, and again, the time may be short. Help us to overcome, to stay strong and true to your word. Help us to overcome our shortcomings, and again, once more, to strengthen our dedication and our devotion to you. And we thank you for the friends and the brethren and the family here. And we pray that you may be with your people throughout this world, those worshiping and praising you, Almighty Yahweh, throughout this world. For we know that there are many, many that we're unaware of, that you may bless them as well. And we ask all this in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. I'd like to welcome everybody here today. It's a blessing to see Debbie and Steve and Debbie here and everyone else. The full auditorium, so it's a blessing. You know, in the last few weeks, we've seen many things come to pass. Earthquakes, cyclones. We've seen the drop in the dollar. We've seen energy increase in value. We've seen many signs, I believe, that indicates that we may be near the end. And I'm not giving this message to alarm you. What I'm hoping, the goal is to build devotion, dedication, because the time before us, if it truly is before us, and if the signs are here today and we find ourselves in the Great Tribulation, it will require a tremendous amount of faith and dedication and devotion. I don't think we really understand or comprehend the seriousness and the significance and the hardships that we may go through in the near future. So it's time that we think about some of these things, understand that the signs that we find within Yahweh's word are coming to pass. So I'm going to look at several trends today, events we've seen in the last few weeks, and reflect on what Yahweh's word says about those events. I'd like to begin, and I know we're all familiar with this, the earthquake in China. I'd like to begin by reading an article, Fox News, dated the 22nd of May. And the title is, China Earthquake Dead, Missing More Than 80 Million, Millions of Tents Sought. It says, China said the toll of dead and missing from last week's powerful earthquake jumped to more than 80,000. 80,000 dead or missing. While the government appealed Thursday for millions of tents to shelter homeless survivors, the confirmed number of dead rose nearly 10,000 from the day before to 51,000. Cabinet spokesman Gu Woman told a news conference another 29,328 people remained missing and nearly 300,000 were hurt in the May 12th quake centered in the Sichuan province, he said. The disaster left 5 million people homeless and leveled more than 80% of the buildings in some remote towns and villages near the epicenter. In bigger cities, entire apartment blocks collapsed or are too dangerous to live in because of damage and worries about aftershocks. We need more than 3.3 million tents, Foreign Minister spokesman Quinn Gang told reporters, adding that 400,000 tents already have been delivered. It was the second call for tents from China in recent days. 80,000 people, either dead or missing. 30,000 still unaccounted for, 300,000 injured, and 5 million homeless. This is a travesty like really no other in recent time. We had just a few thousand that died, lost their lives during 9/11. Many years ago, we find here that possible 80,000 people were either missing or dead. What a travesty. I can't imagine being in China right now, going through this horrific time. Many people are homeless, 5 million people homeless. Can you imagine in this nation something like this occurring? 5 million people homeless. What if this happened here locally and we lost our homes, we lost our land, we lost everything that meant anything to us, and all we had was a tent provided by the government? Or that day may come. That day may come. What we find here is a small sign of what will happen, I believe, in the end times. We find Yahweh's word. We're gonna look at a few stories before we delve into the word today. But we find throughout the word, it talks about earthquakes, it talks about famines and disease and pestilence, and how all these things will happen and increase, and they're going to happen in different locations. This isn't the only location, although I find it interesting that many of these disasters here recently have happened in Asia and China and that part of the world. But I don't think they're alone. I think Yahweh was ready to pour forth his wrath on this earth. And we're going to see this in other places. Actually, we've seen this in here recently with some hurricanes in Kansas and Colorado, I believe, tornadoes. So Yahweh's wrath is here. And we're seeing this in China, in this nation, and also in other parts of the world. Burma recently, and I know we're all familiar with this as well. This is dated May 19th. Burma declares 3 days of mourning for cyclone victims. Burma's on Monday announced a 3-day mourning period for cyclone victims, while the country's neighbors said that they will establish a task force to handle foreign aid distribution. The mourning period started Tuesday, comes as people remain angry at what appears to be an inadequate government effort following the storm that left at least 130 people dead or missing. 130,000 people. Did I say million? 130,000 people dead or missing in Burma because of this cyclone. Again, this is on its own scale. The UN estimates that 1.5 million to 2.5 million survivors are in need of food, water, shelter, and medical care. Again, these people are homeless. Some of them may be blessed, if you will, to have tents, to have some sort of shelter, but many have nothing. They have nothing. And we can see photos here of some of the damage in Burma. These small children, families, with nothing now. Their homes are gone. This day is coming. A day of Yahweh's wrath will be poured out upon this earth. And again, I think it's time that we acknowledge and understand that this day is coming. And I've said this before, and I believe it now. Now is not the time to be asleep. Now is not the time to be lukewarm. With what we're seeing in this world today, there's too much at cost. There's too much at stake to be lukewarm with Yahweh's truth, to only go halfway. If Yahweh says to keep his commandments, we better keep them. If Yahweh says love your neighbor, you better love your neighbor. We better follow through with Yahweh's word and to keep his word, to devote and dedicate our lives to him. Because again, someday this could happen here. A like disaster, whether it's an earthquake or a hurricane or maybe even a tsunami on the coast. These things can happen. So we know that Burma suffering from famine, disease, and again, loss of shelter. More than 100,000 people dead or missing. This is something that sort of hits close to home. Oil hits $135 a barrel amid supply concerns. And this was Thursday, May 22nd, 2008 from Fox News. It says oil prices rose above $135 a barrel for the first time Thursday. With supply worries, global demand, and ever-increasing U.S. dollar, driving crude futures up. The world's top energy watchdog is preparing a sharp downward revision of its oil supply forecast. According to the report in the Wall Street Journal, and I find this fascinating here, investors see hard commodities such as oil as a hedge against inflation and a weak dollar. A weak dollar also makes oil less expensive to buyers dealing in other currencies. Many investors believe that dollar's protracted decline over the past years have been the most significant factor behind oil's rise from about $66 a barrel a year ago. Can you imagine? We've had oil double in the last year for the Americans, and I do contribute a lot of this to the drop or decline in the value of the dollar. One of the major factors, again, is the decrease in our currency. Many economists say that the price of oil could very possibly keep us into a prolonged recession. Now, according to economists, this will impact the world, and we know that. We saw that during 9/11, how our stock market crashed or took a severe decline. And we saw the ripple effect throughout the world. The other countries, China and others, their stock markets dropped when ours dropped. You know, let's face it, this world is a worldwide economy now. We're all tied together, I believe. And with the rise in oil, I believe that we're going to see an increase in food cost, and we've seen that. I believe that this is going to make famine worse. We know that food is scarce and more scarce throughout this world. Places like Egypt, they're having social unrest because they don't have enough food to feed their people, and they don't have the money to buy the food. You know, many families, and I may read this again in one of the articles, but they spend anywhere from 70-80% of their income on food. They say Americans spend an average of 16% on food. So you can imagine a 20% on food cost is significant for a family spending 70% already on food. So all this ties together. We may say, what significance does the price of oil have scripturally? Again, all this leads to prophecy. All this leads to higher food costs, to less of a supply, famines. It leads to prophecy. That's why it's important to understand these things. Another article from the International Herald Tribune entitled Energy Growth and Food Shortages from Thursday, April 10th, 2008, says this: most people in the world's wealthiest countries take food for granted. Even the poorest fifth of the households in the United States spend only 16% of their budget on food. In many other countries, it is less of a given. Nigerian families spend 73% of their budget to eat. Can you imagine? 73% of what you're making goes right into your food. But that doesn't leave a whole lot of money for a roof over your head and for the many, many benefits we take for granted here in this nation. 73%. Vietnamese, 65%. Indonesians, half. They are in trouble. Last year, the food import bill of developing countries rose by 25% as food prices rose to levels not seen in a generation. So we're seeing an increase in food, an increase in cost. Corn, it says, doubled in price over the last 2 years. Wheat reached its highest price in 28 years. The increases are already sparking unrest from Haiti to Egypt. I was watching the news several weeks ago, and it was showing footage of people rushing to this counter just to buy some rice in Egypt, that they have a shortage. And with that, they also have an increase in food cost. So they're really seeing social unrest and concern because of the cost, the increase in food, the increase in cost. It says many countries have imposed price controls on food or taxes on agricultural exports. Last week, the president of the World Bank, Robert Zoellick, warned that 33 nations are at risk of social unrest because of the rising price of food. For countries where food comprises from half to three quarters of consumption, there is no margin for survival, he said. Prices are unlikely to drop soon. The United States and other developed countries needs to step up to the plate. The rise in food prices is partly because of forces beyond their control, including rising energy costs and the growth of the middle class in China and India. Many people do not understand that this is partly what's contributing to oil prices throughout this world. There's more of a demand in China and India. You know, they're rapidly growing while we're declining as a culture and as a nation here in the U.S. Goes on to say, this has increased demand for animal protein, which requires large amounts of grain. But the rich world is exasperating these efforts by supporting the production of biofuels, ethanol, for instance. It says the International Monetary Fund estimates that corn ethanol production in the United States accounted for at least half of the rise in world corn demand each year of the past 3 years. United States accounted for at least half the rise in world corn demand in each of the past 3 years. I guess I copied that twice. But we see here that the food cost is increasing. And it's not only increasing here. You know, we're really blessed if you think about it, because we still have money to afford the high gas. We still have funds to afford the high food prices. There's millions of people throughout this world that don't have the money to cover the increased cost in grain, the increased cost in wheat or corn. Right now, they're living with less while we maintain status quo. Again, as according to that one article, 16% of our budget is spent on food, while almost up to 75% of some of these other countries are spent on food. Well, that's an amazing statistic for me. So we see an increase in food cost. And again, we have a cause here. We know that China and India, they're growing and demand is increasing. But we also have less because of our biofuels, the ethanol that we're producing, which I believe personally is a mistake if you study into it. Because of that, because of ethanol, saying it's possibly increased price 20% or 10%. And overall, they've seen a 20% increase in food. And again, when you're paying 75%, another 20% is 95% of your income is going to food. How are you going to pay for your lodging or for your medical supplies or for other needs that you might have? You know, I think we need to look back and realize how blessed we really are in this nation. We're still blessed. You know, I know it's hard for many of us, and maybe we can't go out to the movies every Friday night, or we can't do what we did maybe a month or a year ago. But we're very blessed in this nation. The fact that we have food on our table, and I've told you this before, I don't know if I've ever told you the story of the transmission. You know, my wife's transmission went out during Unleavened Bread, and it was $1,800 we found out to fix it. Or I went to the dealership, and they, through some negotiations, paid everything but $260, I believe. So Yahweh can bless you. But, you know, at the time when I found out, I could have been upset. But I thought to myself, you know, I have food on the table. I have a roof over my head, a wonderful family. You know, why should this put me in a bad mood? I can pay for this. You know, we'll get through this. And it just so happens, yeah, we blessed my wife, me and my wife, but we need to consider really what we have as a nation. What can this lead to? What can an increase in food prices and also an increase in demand, or it can lead to famine? What can famine lead to? Or famine can lead to social unrest. Famine can lead to war. It can even lead to the collapse of governments and nations. All this may be for the fulfillment of prophecy. And, you know, I look around and I look at what Yahweh's word says. I look at what's happening in this world, and I just can't help to believe that we may be at the brink of something big. We may be near the Great Tribulation. And I'm not telling you this to alarm you. But I think we all need to realize the days we're living in. And I think we need to be prepared both physically, which I do believe it's a good idea to store food, at least for maybe a few months. I know my wife and I, we've began storing food. But even more importantly, I think it's crucial that we have our spiritual life in order during these last days, if indeed it is the last days. Because when these days do come upon us, if we're not strong now, if we don't have the devotion now, I don't believe that we will ever overcome what's coming upon us. You see, we must not only be devoted now, but be devoted in the future, and even more so. You know, Yahshua said it's going to be the worst time in the history of this world. Nothing's going to be like the time of the Great Tribulation. And the time before the Great Tribulation, Jacob's troubles, the time that this earth will see signs like we're seeing today, but worse. You know, where we see more disasters and more famines and more war. So what does Yahweh say about all this? Let's find out. Luke chapter 21, verse 11. Yahweh says, there will be great earthquakes in various places, and famines and pestilences. The word earthquake is from the Greek word seismos, and it means a commotion. And interestingly enough, it means a commotion in the air, or it says a strong wind, or the ground, an earthquake. So this earthquake, or seismos, as we find in the Greek, can also refer to earthquakes, hurricanes, cyclones, tsunamis. So this word in the Greek is not specific only to earthquakes. Seismos is more broad. Or the word famine is from eismos, and it's through the idea of destitution, scarcity of food specifically. So I think that conveys what we think of when we say famine. There's no food. People are starving. And disease is from loimos, and it means a plague, literally the disease or a plague. So Yahshua said here that before he is coming, we would see all these things happen. We would see commotions in the air. We would see commotions on the ground. We would see scarcity of food, and we would see plagues and diseases upon this earth. Now you tell me, are we not seeing these things today? Are we not seeing earthquakes today? Are we not seeing hurricanes today? Are we not seeing cyclones today? Are we not seeing tsunamis today in this world? Are we not seeing famines today in this world? Are we not seeing diseases and plagues in this world? All these things we see today in this world, and I don't believe that we've seen the time of Jacob's trouble yet, but the signs are here. The signs are here. Matthew 24, verse 7. Matthew 24, verse 7. Yahshua said, for nation will rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of sorrows or troubles. All these are but the beginning of sorrows. We find again Yahshua predicting earthquakes, famines, and disease will come upon this earth before his coming. And, you know, interestingly enough, Yahshua said, don't be worried about this. Don't be troubled. He said, for these things are but the beginning of trouble. But he said, don't be alarmed about it. They must come to pass, is what he said. They must happen. They must happen. So what we see here is signs that will and must come to pass according to Yahweh's word. And I'm afraid we're seeing some of these signs today and an increase in these signs. Yahshua said also here, nation would be against nation and kingdom against kingdom. What did Yahshua mean when he said this? Doesn't this sound repetitive to you? Where there's a meaning behind here, and we need to go to the Greek. Nation is ethnos. It means a race or a tribe. Ethnos, nation. The word kingdom is basilia, and it means to rule or a realm, a nation, a sovereign nation. So Yahshua prophesied here that we would see civil wars, and we're certainly seeing civil wars in Africa and other places throughout the world. But we would also see and hear of wars between kingdoms, between nations. And we're seeing that today. You know, we have the constant threat we're going to talk about later with Iran in the Middle East, but there's constant unrest in the Middle East. I don't know if you've studied how World War II began, but it wasn't a real significant event worldwide. But yet, it was a catalyst to begin a world war. Where the same could happen now, and will happen someday. But Yahshua, he prophesied of all these signs, that these things would happen and take place before his coming. Now listen here, he says, verse 8, he says, all these things are but the beginning of sorrows, the beginning of troubles. He's not saying, look, this is the end. This is all you're going to have to go through. No. He says, this is but the beginning of sorrows. And according to Yahweh's word, from what I can find, we will go through some of these tribulations. We will go through some of these trials, some of these some of these persecutions. And that's why I'm such a big believer, and we need to be prepared now. Because we can't wait 10, 15 years from now. We need to devote our lives now to our Father in heaven. We can't wait. Now is the time. Now is the day. But notice that Yahshua said, these are but the beginning of sorrows. It's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. And I'm not going to speak about that today, but we can go to Revelation. We can look at the river Euphrates drying up so that the people from the sun rising, it says. Most people say the Oriental nations can march to Armageddon, to Armageddon. We can see how much of the water supply will be tainted during the Great Tribulation, how many men will die through plagues. So this is but the beginning of sorrows, the beginning of troubles. Revelation chapter 6, verse 12. Reminisce again about China and what happened there. 80,000 people was either dead or lost, missing. Revelation 6, 12, it says, I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake. And the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood. Like blood. So we find here a prophecy of an earthquake. And this is very specific. Very specific. Now I believe that this, if you look at this passage, it occurs when Yahshua returns. A great earthquake. Zechariah 14 speaks about a great earthquake occurring when Yahshua literally comes down to this earth. And we know that this passage says that the great men, or they thought they were great until the wrath of the Lamb came down. And it says they're going to hide themselves, try to escape the wrath of the Lamb. And all this is going to occur at the same time. The moon will become like blood. And again, we see an indication of this in Zechariah, that there's going to be darkness, one day of darkness at this time. So earthquakes. Revelation chapter 6, verse 5. And it says, when he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature saying, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a black horse. And he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for denarius and three quarts of barley for denarius. And do not hurt the oil and the wine. Or what is a denarius? A denarius, it was a Roman coin. It was worth about a day's labor. What we find here is a prophecy saying that in the end times, we're going to be able to buy about a quart of wheat with a day's labor. Or a quart of wheat is not that much food. So this is indicative of what? It's indicative of famine. We're going to find famine and see famine throughout this earth. This is part of the four horsemen, part of the six seals we find in Revelation. But here we find with this third horseman that it represents famine. And we're going to find that food prices specifically here, wheat and barley will increase, where you'll get a small amount of wheat for a full day of labor. And that's all you can afford because of the cost of food. Are we seeing that today? Are we seeing food prices, wheat and corn, and other crops increase? Absolutely. Do we find this within Yahweh's word? Absolutely. What we find and what we see today, I believe we find in Yahweh's word. The increase in food like never before is prophesied. It's prophesied. And I find it amazing here that it's so specific to wheat and barley. And what do we hear in the news? Wheat. Wheat. Wheat and corn and other common crops. Or what else do we find within the word? Revelation 6, verse 7, it says, when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, come and see. So I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and the name of him who sat on it was Death, and Hades, or the grave, followed with him. And power was given to them over a fourth of the earth, one fourth, to kill with sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beasts of the earth. You know, I've always said that this is pestilence. I believe that this is death. If we look at what it's saying here, it's death. And we find that this death is cumulative of the other three horsemen before. We know that we have deception, we have famine, and we have war. That's the three the three horsemen. This is the fourth horseman. This fourth horseman is a cumulative impact of the other three. Watch what it says here. It says that this horseman brings death, and Hades follows with him. How does he bring this death? It says he will kill with a sword, the sword, war, and he will kill with hunger, famine. And again, we know that when you have hunger, when you have war, I know one of the concerns right now in Burma is disease, you know, with the pollution of the water. But disease and pestilence typically follows famine and war. And we have indication throughout Yahweh's word that we will also see disease and pestilence during this time. Well, here we find the fourth horseman. And this fourth horseman, again, is a cumulative of the other three. And this fourth horseman represents the death that will occur at the hand of the other three, at the hand of the anti-Messiah or deception, at the hand of war, and at the hand of famine. And again, with that, you have pestilence and disease. So these things are coming upon us. The earthquake, the cyclone, the increase in oil, the use of biofuels, the increase in demand from India and China and other parts of the world are bringing these plagues upon us. And we need to be alert and vigilant with what's occurring in this world, because these things will happen. I'd like to look at another event that occurred here recently, and that is the homosexual marriage in California. I'd like to read an article from CNN dated May 16th. It says, California ban on same-sex marriage struck down. And you know, what I find amazing about this story is that the people of California went to the polls, and they said, no, we don't believe in same-sex marriage. And what happened? They took it to the court system. And just a few people, not even a handful, reversed the decision of all the people. It shows you who makes the laws in this nation nowadays. It's not the people. It's not the people, because the people of California went to the polls years ago and said, no, we don't accept this. So the California Supreme Court struck it down, it says. Here's what it says. The California Supreme Court struck down the state's ban on same-sex marriage Thursday, saying sexual orientation, like race or gender, does not constitute a legitimate basis upon which to deny or withhold legal rights. In a 4-3, it was split, 120-page ruling issue, the justices wrote that responsibility to care for and raise children does not depend upon the individual's sexual orientation. We therefore conclude that in view of the substance and significance of the fundamental constitutional right to form a family relationship, the California Constitution properly must be interpreted to guarantee this basic civil right to all Californians, whether gay or heterosexual, and the same-sex couples as well as to opposite-sex couples. Chief Justice Ronald George wrote, for the majority, the ruling takes effect in 30 days. Or again, I find it amazing that California, the people can go to the polls, they can vote on this, and yet, what was it, 4-3, overruled millions of people. What an amazing travesty. But even worse yet, what a horrible decline of morality in this nation. You know, we've seen this in other nations, in Massachusetts, and other attempts in other nations. But slowly, the morality that we've held so long in this nation is declining before our eyes. And again, I believe it's meant to be. I really do. Yahshua said, don't worry about it. These things must come to pass. But you know what? We need to be aware. We need to be aware that these things are happening around us. We need to understand that we can't be part of this system. We need to understand the seriousness of this moral decline that we're seeing right now in this nation. We can't be partakers. As the good book says, come out of her, my people. We cannot partake in this sin. We cannot accept this sin. We cannot condone this sin. Moral decline in this nation. What does Yahweh say about this? You know, Paul never was bashful. He always shared his views, and he did it with sodomy. Romans chapter 1, verse 26, it says, "For this reason, Elohim gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature." Notice that, against nature. "Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful, and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error which was due. And even as they did not like to retain Elohim in their knowledge, Elohim gave them up to a debased mind, or reprobate, to do those things which are not fitting." Not fitting. Or, you know, people ask, what's wrong with homosexual marriage? What's wrong with this? Well, number one, we find here what's wrong with it. Yahweh says, look, this is against nature. Paul, the Apostle Paul, says this was not what Yahweh designed. What did Yahweh design? In the very beginning, when we go back to Genesis, what did Yahweh do? He says, here's Adam, here's Eve. One woman, one man, for life. For life. One man, one woman, for life. Anything else is against nature. Anything else is against Yahweh's design. And that's what we find here, Paul saying, look, this is against nature. Where he also says here that because of this, and it says, you know, because of their sin, because they rejected me, Yahweh says. It says, Elohim gave them up to a debased mind. What is a debased mind? Does anybody know what a debased or reprobate mind is? Well, here's what the meaning of this word. It comes from the word adokimos in the Greek, and it means unapproved, rejected, by implication, worthless, literally or morally. So these people who engage in this sin, Yahweh's rejected. It's unapproved by him. And we also find here through this word that it's morally worthless. There's nothing moral about this sin. It's, as Paul says here, debased, it's a reprobate. They no longer know what's right and wrong, and we find that it says to do those things which are not fitting. You see, they've gone so far from Yahweh's word, they no longer know truth. And we've seen that in this nation. You talk to people and you ask them, why is fornication, or there nothing's wrong with fornication? Why is adultery? Or there's nothing wrong with adultery. People don't know. We've gone that far from as a nation. We do not know morality. We do not understand Yahweh's word, and part of the reason is Yahweh says, you know what? If you want to reject me, fine. I'm going to give you up to a reprobate, to a debased mind, a mind that is not approved, a mind that is morally corrupt and worthless. And that's what we find here. I believe I brought in an article. I was doing some research this morning, couldn't find anything real recent. I found one article from the Weekly Standard. This is dated February of 2004. It's from the Weekly Standard again. And I'm not going to read the entire thing. It's an 11-page article. I'm going to leave it up here on the pulpit after service. If you'd like to come up and read it, feel free to do so. Just like to read a few paragraphs. It says here in the opening paragraph, marriage is slowly dying in Scandinavia. A majority of children in Sweden and Norway are born out of wedlock. 60% of firstborn children in Denmark have unmarried parents. Not coincidentally, these countries have had something close to full gay marriage for a decade or more. Same-sex marriage has locked in and reinforced an existing Scandinavian trend toward the separation of marriage and parenthood. The neurotic family pattern, including gay marriage, is spreading across Europe. And by looking closely at it, we can answer the key empirical question underlining the gay marriage debate. Will same-sex marriage undermine the institution of marriage? And it goes on to say it already has. More precisely, it has further undermined the institution. The separation of marriage from parenthood was increasing. Gay marriage has widened the separation. Out of wedlock, birth rates were rising. Gay marriage has added to the factors pushing those rates higher. Instead of encouraging a social right return to marriage, Scandinavian gay marriage has driven home the message that marriage itself is outdated and that virtually all family form, including out-of-wedlock parents, is acceptable. Bear with me here for just a moment. goes on to say on page 5, Norway's gay marriage debate, which ran most intensely from 1991 through 1993, was a cultural shift event. And once enacted, gay marriage had a decidedly conservative impact on Norway's cultural contests, weakening marriage's defenders and placing a weapon in the hands of those who sought to replace marriage with cohabitation. Since its adoption, gay marriage has brought division and decline to Norway's Lutheran Church. Meanwhile, Norway's fast-rising out-of-wedlock birth rate has shot past Denmark's. Particularly in Norway, one relatively conservative gay marriage has undermined marriage's institutional standing for everyone. Page 6, it goes on to say, so rather than strengthening Norwegian marriage against the rise of cohabitation and out-of-wedlock birth, same-sex marriage had the opposite effect. Gay marriage lessened the church's authority by splitting it into warring factions and providing secular media with occasions to mock and expose divisions. Gay marriage also elevated the church's openly rebellious minority liberal faction to national visibility, allowing Norwegians to feel that their proclivity for unmarried parenthood, if not fully approved by the church, was at least not strongly condemned. If the conservative case for gay marriage had been valid, clergy who were supportive of gay marriage would have taken a strong public and against unmarried heterosexual parenthood. This didn't happen. It was a conservative clergy who criticized the prince, while the liberal supporters of gay marriage tolerated his decisions. The message was not lost of ordinary Norwegians who continued their fight to unmarried parents. And it goes on. I was going to read some more here. Well, let me read this last paragraph. It says, Sweden's position as the world leader in family decline is associated with the weak clergy. And this shows the association between when morality declines in a nation, religion also declines. And many people, they don't see this association. But it points us out here. It says, as a world leader in family decline is associated with a weak clergy and the preeminence of secular and left-shifting social scientists, in the post-gay marriage 90s, as Norway's once relatively low out-of-wedlock birth rate was climbing to unprecedented heights, and as a gay marriage controversy weakened and split the once respected Lutheran state church, secular social scientists took center stage. So what concern do we have with gay marriage? Or, for one, we find that it decreases the significance of marriage itself. It debases Yahweh's original institution of marriage. And that is by far the most significant problem with this institution. But as we also read, it spins the nation downward into a greater immoral stance and culture. We've seen this in Sweden and Norway and other European nations. And the trend is here. We've seen this in Massachusetts and now in California. And it's only a matter of time. I'm reminded of Isaiah when I was preparing for this message. It says in Isaiah 5:20, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. This is the day that we're living in right now. People, they call evil good and good evil. What do you mean we can't live together? Who are you to judge me? Well, Yahweh's word says it. The book that we're supposed to live by says that fornication is wrong. Fornication is a sin. Adultery is a sin. We're to stay married. Marriage is for life. And yet people, you criticize, you even state the standard. And you anger people. People don't want to hear Yahweh's word. They don't want to hear the sweet. They don't want to hear the light. They want the darkness. They want the bitter. They want the evil. That's what we're living in today. A nation and a world that really calls evil good and good evil. It's a shame. But this is a world that we're living in today. I'd like to move on to the last event here. And hopefully I pronounced this right. Ahmadinejad, destroy Israel, end crisis. And this is in 2006. I have a more recent article, and he's said this many times, but I thought I'd quote this article. It's from August 3rd, 2006, Washington Post. Iranian president said Thursday the solution to the Middle East crisis is to destroy Israel. In a speech during an emergency meeting of Muslim leaders, Ahmadinejad also called for an immediate halt to fighting in Lebanon between Israel and the Iranian-backed militant group Hezbollah. In a more recent article, May 7th of this year, Israel 60, proud but facing an uncertain future, says Israel is marking its 60th Independence Day, which began at sundown Wednesday. With a great, it's interesting, even today they mark their days beginning at sundown. With a great sense of pride, but also uncertainty about its future and doubts about prospects for peace with the Palestinians. 6 decades after rising from the ashes of the Holocaust, the Jewish state is still plagued by threats from abroad and an identity crisis at home. They see Iran as their greatest threat with its nuclear program and a president who calls for Israel's destruction. Israel's conflict with the Palestinians is the biggest obstacle to normalcy. So here we find that there's unrest in the Middle East. We know this. But do we find indication that this may support prophecy? Or absolutely. There's one passage, and Elder Don pointed this out years and years ago to us, but there's one passage here in Psalms 83 that I believe is prophetic. I'm going to read it to you. It's Psalms 83, verses 1 through 4 here. It says, "Do not keep silence, O Elohim. Do not hold your peace, and do not be still, O Elohim. For behold, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. They have said, 'Come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more.' For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy or union against you." Now listen, it says the tents of Edom, the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagarites, Gebel, Ammon, and Amalek. Philistia with the inhabitants of Tyre, Assyria also has joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot. Now, who are these people? These names, they don't make a whole lot of sense to us. Who are they? Well, here's where they're located today. Edom is southern Jordan. The Ishmaelites, that's the Arab people as a whole. Moab is central Jordan. The Hagarites is Egypt. Gebel is Lebanon. Ammon is northern Jordan. Amalek is the Sinai Peninsula. Philistia is a Gaza Strip, Tyre's Lebanon, and Assyria's Syria, and part of Iraq. So we find a prophecy here saying that 10 nations will make a confederacy, will make a league with one goal, a union with one goal in mind. What is that goal? What do we find here in Psalms 83? That goal, it says, to cut Israel off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more, to cut off Israel from being a nation. This is precisely what we hear from the president of Iran and other Arab leaders today. You know, according to most scholars, and this is fascinating, according to most scholars, this prophecy, it hasn't happened. There's no historical evidence that these 10 nations ever formed a confederacy, ever formed a union. There's nothing in history, according to most scholars, meaning that this is prophetic. This will happen in the future, that these nations, specifically these 10 nations, will form a confederacy to destroy Israel so that Israel may be named no more. Are we seeing this today? Absolutely, again, from the Arab nations, from Iran and other places. I believe that this will happen in the future. This is prophetic. This is a prophetic prophecy within Yahweh's word. You know, we know the scripture supports that Judah and Benjamin, the two tribes, will be in Jerusalem when Yahshua returns. Zechariah chapter 12, verses 1 through 14, talks about how Yahshua is going to return and how he will defend specifically. And I find it ironic, specifically, it says the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, specifically. It focuses on those two tribes, or where are they today? The Jews, which we know historically, the Benjaminites were part of that people and still are. They're in the Middle East. And they're going to be there, I believe, according to prophecy, when Yahshua returns. Because it says, again, prophecy that Yahshua will come back and defend the tribes of Judah and Benjamin specifically. I find that amazing. And I wasn't going to speak on this, but one of my favorite passages in scriptures is, if you read down, it talks about how they're going to look at the one whom they perished, whom they impelled. And they're going to mourn for Yahshua as one mourns for his only son, scripture says. They're going to be distraught with the fact that they're going to finally realize that the person that they put to death was our Savior, was their Savior, was the Messiah, was the Son of Yahweh. Isn't that amazing? Yahweh's word prophesies that Yahshua will return, and when he does, they're going to look upon him, that Judah and Benjamin specifically, and they're going to say, wow, they're going to mourn, and they're going to regret what they did. But the fantastic news is they're going to acknowledge him, and they're going to accept the Messiah. Well, that's a little bit off the topic, but it's one of my favorite passages, and certainly is in the area. Revelation 13:1. These 10 nations also, I believe, they have additional prophetic importance, significance. Revelation 13:1 says, "Then I stood at the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And on his horns, 10 crowns, and on his heads, a blasphemous name." Now, this is a description of the beast, not the false prophet, the beast, the anti-Messiah. And here it says that he's going to have 10 crowns, horns with 10 crowns on his head. What do these 10 horns or 10 crowns represent? Revelation 17, verse 12 says, "The 10 horns which you saw," now listen, "are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but they will receive authority as for one hour is king, as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast." So here we have 10 nations who will rule, and I believe that they will receive their power, their authority from this anti-Messiah, this beast figure we find in Revelation 13, along with many other passages. But it says that they have one mind, meaning they're all on the same page. They have one goal. And I believe that this goes back to Psalms 83, where it says they make a confederacy. They make a union, an Arab union, for the purpose to wipe Israel off the face of the map, the face of the earth, to destroy Israel once and for all. And we know, scripturally, that this is what we find in Zechariah chapter 12. We know in the end times that all the nations of the earth, it says, will gather at Armageddon, the big valley there in Israel. And then they will march to Jerusalem. Revelation 16 talks about Armageddon or Armageddon. And then you can turn to Zechariah chapter 12 and you can find that when this happens, Yahshua is going to come back and he's going to return and he's going to fight against all those nations who comes against Israel, that comes against specifically, it says, Judah and Benjamin. But here we find the 10 kings that will make a confederacy, I believe. The same 10 kings that we found in Psalms 83, the same 10 toes we find in the book of Daniel, and the same 10 kings we also find in Daniel chapter 7. They're all the same. Different images, but all the same. 10 kings who will rule with the anti-Messiah. Yahshua said something extremely important for us to follow and understand. Matthew chapter 24, verse 32, it says, "Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth the leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near at the door." Now, we know that this falls within Yahshua's Olivet prophecy. Yahshua was saying, look, as you can go out and you can see leaves on the trees, and you know summer's near. Or he says, in the same way, you look for these signs. And he says, as you see these signs approaching, as you see these signs coming to pass, you know that my coming is near. It's even at the door, he says. So this is an indicator of what we're to watch for. We've looked at these signs, and I believe that we're seeing many of these signs again in this day and age. Again, we're seeing earthquakes and tsunamis and cyclones and increase in food, famines. We're seeing all this today. Now, you might ask, what can we do about these signs? We're absolutely nothing, and it's not for us to do anything about. Yahshua says again, be not worried, be not troubled. He says, for these things must come to pass. They need to happen. They will happen. There's nothing we can do to prevent it. But here's, again, the reason I gave this message. It's not to review prophecy. Most of us, we understand this. But I think it's good for us to hear the message, to understand that the signs may be coming to pass, and that we all need to improve. I can assure you that all of us need improvement in our walk with Almighty Yahweh. We need to become more devoted, more dedicated to Him. We need to observe His Sabbath. We need to observe His feast days. We need to show love to our brethren. We need to forgive one another. Because if we can't do these things now, how in the world will we be able to follow through when times become hard? You know, we hear all kinds of excuses as to why people can't obey. Oh, I have a job, they won't let me off. Oh, I have a family, I have a career, I have college. So what? Who comes first? Is it your family? Is it your college? Is it your career? Or is it Almighty Yahweh? You know, I've told my boss multiple times, and they know where I stand. I said my priorities are faith, family, and job, maybe three. Maybe. But it's certainly not number one and two. Faith and family is first. And then the other things in life, they take a back seat. They're somewhere down the list. But we as Yahweh's people, we need to always remember what's coming upon us. Because I'm telling you now, from all indications scripturally, it's going to be a bad time. It's going to be a rough time. It's going to be a time that is going to test us like never before. You know, Yahshua asks an intriguing question in Luke 18:8. He says, at His coming, will I find faith, or will I find the faith on the earth? Some scholars differ with what the Greek is indicating. The faith or faith. But the point is, Yahshua is saying, look, it's going to be hard. And He asked the disciples, you know, when I return, will I find faith? Will I find people devoted? Will I find people worshiping Me? And only we know. Scripture says, work out your own salvation in fear and trembling. We must all work out our own salvation and strive every day to be better and devote our lives to Yahweh. So again, the purpose and reason I gave this message is, number one, I guess, to show you that things are coming to pass, signs are happening, but we need to become more devoted. We need to follow Almighty Yahweh and put Him first and foremost, always. May Yahweh bless you.